Welcome to the podcast of Thousand Harbors Zen, featuring talks with Cohen France. This podcast is made possible by generous donations from our listeners. To contribute or to learn more about our community, please visit thousandharborszen.com.
Every morning for the last 2 months, I've gotten up to sit. I wake up at 6:15 and I go and I put cold water on my face. I get dressed and I come downstairs and I drink a glass of water. And then I come in and I set things up here and finish getting dressed and then ring the bell and we begin. And in the middle of that, when I first get down the stairs, I walk into the kitchen and I open the blinds and I bring some light into the kitchen. And then I get that glass of water. And the other day, it was particularly sunny and the kitchen was very bright. I skipped the part with the blinds and I went straight to the glass of water. And then I came into this room and I stopped and I turned around because I felt like I had to do that other part. I had to go back in and open that blind, even though I wasn't there anymore. And no one was there, and there was no reason to do it. And then I just had to laugh at myself. I'm establishing through, especially through this current situation of being at home all the time, I'm starting to establish certain kinds of what we might call rituals, or we might call them habits, or we might, if we want to go down this path enough, we might start to call them compulsions. They're unconscious. And yet, because I do them all the time, because I have this sense of structure, there's a feeling almost of being supported by them, or a feeling that if they aren't there, then something is off. And I mentioned this to a few people, and the response I got was that other people are experiencing this as well, that in our small cages, that we're starting to develop structures, often without any intention to do so, but we find that we always do this first, and we always do this second, and we always do this third. I find myself thinking about this place. It was near where I lived in Japan for a while, called Cuddly Dominion. It was a bear park. Maybe 30 years before I lived there, a man had started breeding bears in this enclosure, and it got completely out of control. And so when you would go, you'd pay to go in, and there were all these different cages with bears, and there was this initial moment of wow, because you'd never seen so many bears. And then as you started to slow down and pay attention, you would see that each bear was trapped in a kind of neurotic loop. So one would just walk, clockwise, and then kind of brush up against a pole and then turn around and go back the other way and brush up against the pole and go back and do this all day long. And most of them actually were functioning in these loops. And it's a phenomenon with any kind of animal in captivity. And I've heard bears in particular. So I feel this a little bit, I'm beginning to kind of walk in these loops. I wonder if you are too. I wonder if there's a hint of this in your life. And it gets me thinking about ritual and what ritual is, not in that sense, but in the sense of this tradition. And also about how even as we're in this circumstance that might lend itself to all sorts of unconscious action, we're also in a circumstance that lends itself to an exploration of ritual in a way that's maybe different from what we've experienced before, which is really a gift. And I'll give you a small example. Some of you may have noticed that a lot of Zen people have this affectation when they write email, that at the end, instead of something like sincerely, they write gassho, which is this. or ingasho, or palms together, or bowing, or something like that. And I do it, I've done it for years, and some of you do it. And it's been a point of tension for me over the years where I'm not entirely comfortable just writing it. So at different times in my life, I've insisted to myself that every time I hit send on an email that I actually put my hands together. It's simple. It's a small thing. And I'll do that for a while, and then I'll either forget or I'll kind of talk my way out of it. For a while in my current work, I had an office to myself. And as soon as I had that office to myself, I told myself, oh, I'm going to get back into doing this. I'm going to, every time I hit send, after writing gassho, I'm also going to gassho. And I did that for a while. And then we moved to a different space and everyone was sharing the same space. And then I started to feel self-conscious and so I stopped doing it. Here now, I'm alone in a room, I'm in my home. And I'm remembering, oh, I can do this again. I can bring myself forward in this way. Every single time I do this activity that is often so unconscious or so small, or not even that, when you hit send, it's a way of moving to the next thing, right? There's no transition exactly. This creates a space. And it also brings a kind of veracity to what you just wrote and what you just sent to that other person. I'm not saying you have to do this. This is my thing that I kind of play with. But ritual in that way, whatever it is really central to what this practice is. This practice ultimately is a physical practice at its core, and we can forget that. We can imagine that it's psychological. We can imagine that it's spiritual for whatever we think that is, and forget its underpinnings, its foundation. Right now, many of you are in an ideal circumstance to explore the physicality of the practice. And you could do that in a way that mimics monastic life, right? You could change the way that you dress, you could change the way that you walk, you could do things in a way that's very prescribed. But on a simpler level, what you can do is you can choose those rituals rather than having them choose you. The email thing is one thing, right? You can choose that when you open a door that you do it with two hands. You can choose that every morning you wake up and you say the Bodhisattva vows, if you're not sitting with us, because we've already got that covered, right? You can take up the practice of gathas, which Kakumyo talked about a little bit a few weeks ago. These little verses that you say before you do something like switching on the light or cooking a meal, something that takes that ordinary activity and says, this is something with an intention that's greater than what it looks like. So when I'm cooking for all beings. When I'm turning on the light, I'm turning on the light for all beings. That part, the story part, I think is not so critical. The remembering part, the choice to pause and give that moment some shape is a very powerful choice. There's a natural tendency, again, especially right now, as you're standing in your sweatpants that you've worn for 3 days and you're eating toast over your kitchen sink, to imagine that this moment maybe is not the most important moment, that perhaps there are other moments awaiting you or other moments behind you that had greater weight than this one. And if there's anything that this tradition wants to scream at you, it's that that is not true. Not only does this moment matter, this moment is the moment. So if there were ever a moment when you were going to choose to stand up straight, it would be this moment. If there were ever a moment to bow and to feel everything that goes with that, the gratitude and the intention, the stillness, it's this moment. If there were ever a moment to just sit up straight and breathe. It's this moment. As with everything, I'm saying this to myself because I can forget. I can imagine that I'm living somehow in a bubble, or I can imagine that because nothing is being seen, that it matters less what shape I give to this moment. But that's a fundamental misunderstanding. The point of ritual, the point of standing up straight, the point of holding this moment in a particular way is not so that it can be seen, though that can be very powerful. It's so that you can consciously make the choice to hold this moment rather than simply being held by it. The fact that no one can see you is an opportunity and only makes it the more powerful. You can choose, for example, the next time you go to your fridge to open it up and rediscover that everything is exactly the same way it was 20 minutes ago when you went to the fridge and opened it up. You can choose to make that transition slowly. You can choose to pay attention to each step. You can choose to stop sometimes and just breathe. In Thich Nhat Hanh's communities, they ring bells at random times of day and everybody has to stop and take a breath. My house is old, my house makes noises. When it makes particular noises, I can stop and take a breath. Or every time I hear that guy on the motorcycle who goes by 10 times a day, I can stop and I can take a breath. And I can stand just a little bit straighter. I can afford that pause, even though it might not initially feel like I can. This is so simple. This is kind of below Buddhism 101. It's what we can talk about before we talk about any teachings, before we talk about anything conceptual, anything philosophical. Before we walk into that space, we ask ourselves, how do I walk at all? And if I can learn how to bring attention to that, then when I do walk into that space where I'm hearing the conceptual, the philosophical, none of it will be a surprise. Because I'll already understand something about how to hold the world and how to hold myself in the world. And the rest will just be details. I believe that. And that's where I'll stop.
You have been listening to a Thousand Harbors Zen podcast. Please visit thousandharborszen.com.